Hey, Ding Dongs, this is Jamie Cavanaugh.
This is Richard Lamb.
And this is Explain It to Jamie. I am Jamie, and I need some explaining.
That's right. Welcome to our second episode.
Second episode. We are very excited, also nervous, because we feel like our first one went very well.
Very well indeed.
Yeah. Now we have to follow up on that.
This is going
to
be drastically lower your expectations for the second, for the second one.
Today, our topic is Mr. Trump. His first 10 days in office.
Okay, so Jamie, why is it that you want to have Donald Trump's first 10 days in office explained to you?
Because in the future, when all is waste and I and my children are sifting through the rubble and remains of what was society looking for any salvageable metal that we can sell for food credits, I want to be able to look them in the eyes and tell them when and where everything went wrong.
When you and your children are riding on a van through the hellscape, hell-blasted Australian savannah, spewing fire, being chased by a dude wearing a microwave on his head, and those kids are like, "Daddy, why are we on this van being chased by this dude through this hellscape?" You want to be able to start with
Donald Trump's
executive orders.
Thank goodness we had a podcast when I was 28 years old.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. So let's get into it.
All right.
So, Richard, I think, you know, Donald Trump has now been president of the United States for 10 days.
10 whole days.
And I think it's going very well.
Do you? Okay, great. I mean, certainly there are people who agree with you.
Yeah, certainly there's one or two people who must agree with me.
Yeah.
And I think they surround themselves with Donald Trump himself.
That's right.
But
like physically, like they have like a Donald Trump Snuggie where like... Like the opening is his mouth.
That's right.
Like
it's and it's got a fringe around the hood that looks like his hair.
Yeah, that's right.
What the hell's going on, man? He's been signing lots of stuff.
Yes.
As Facebook has told me and everybody's making memes of and all that. And it seems like all of them are like supervillain ideas.
Right.
Is this, can you confirm or deny?
You are sort of right and sort of incorrect. What's weird about what's happening right now is that a lot of what's going on is pretty normal in that the president often signs a bunch of executive orders when they get into office to sort of start putting things in place for them to do what they want to do. And many of the things that Trump is doing, while immoral things I certainly disagree with and a lot of people disagree with, are things probably any Republican president would do. They're still pretty normal. Like I said, normal for a Republican president. And then some of them are like so far in fucking left field and so crazy and so badly done that like supervillain is the wrong word. It's more like it's like a two-headed ogre where one of the heads thinks it's an evil supervillain and the other head is like puking and covered in Cheeto dust and like has 4 days of stubble and does not know what year it is.
Right, right. Like, see, this is the big impression I'm getting is more and more it feels like he's not actually driving the boat. You know, it feels like someone is guiding his hand and telling him, sign this, move on to this. Like, just to give him some sort of sense of normalcy. Because he doesn't seem like a evil mastermind genius. He seems like the ogre monster you described,
yeah.
In which he's just sort of smacking things that walk into his office and he has tamers and people who are guiding him and
yeah, okay, so well there's many things I want to talk about, but that's an absolutely right characterization as far as I know. Like, as far as I know, again, I feel the need to, I'll probably say this caveat every time. We're just two dudes, and I'm just a guy who, like, reads the news and tries to pay attention to what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I don't personally know Donald Trump, but every single thing that I've seen about him and certainly his own behavior and comportment seem to say that he's just a big mouth fucking idiot who will say any shit that comes into his head, believes at that moment that he says it, that it is completely right and true and has absolutely no scruples or morals or care at all if he's lying or telling the truth at all. He doesn't care at all about objective facts or reality. He cares solely about himself, his own self-image, his own personal power, and his own insecurities, I think, frankly, drive a lot of what he does and says. And because of that, he's extremely manipulable, right? People used to say about George W. Bush that the last person who was in the room with him would have their way, right? George W. Bush would do whatever the last person who got to talk to him about an issue said to do.
Right.
And for all intents and purposes, Donald Trump is kind of the same. That's what people have been saying.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing, what we'll get into is that there are a number of people who are very important in Trump's administration, all of whom seem to have his ear. And you can look at the individual things being done by his administration and almost be like, ah, this is a Steve Bannon thing. This is a Jared Kushner thing. This is a, right? They're all right now jockeying for control over him, for the most influence, for who gets his ear, because whoever gets his ear the most, whatever he absorbs at that particular moment is going to be what he decides to act on. Like, there's an incredible article I read this week that was a side-by-side comparison of what Trump tweeted about versus what was on CNN and Fox News that morning.
Mm.
And, like, anything that was on CNN and Fox News, he would basically write a tweet about. Like, you know, when they had the dude, this, like, crazy dude who claimed 3 million people voted illegally in the American election on CNN, that morning Donald Trump said, you know, it's absurd that 3 to 5 million illegal people voted in the election, right? Like,
right.
That's the level of dude we're dealing with here.
Right, right. Which to me is actually way scarier, is that I don't know who the bad guy is.
Steve Bannon.
Because you said, you know, you and I were having a conversation a month or two ago, and we were talking about his relationship with Roy Cohn.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that is like, it's Roy Cohn all over again.
Yeah.
Like the guy that doesn't have the brand name, who is secretly running stuff. And I don't, you know, I don't want to hypothesize about lizard people and, you know, you know, the Illuminati.
Why not, Jamie?
Well,
Have you been to Comet Pizza? Do you know what's in the basement?
But like, you know, that's the scary thing is that, you know, is when the brand name president isn't actually in charge. And I've been doing a lot more reading about Mike Pence and stuff. And I'm actually way more scared of him because he seems to,
Terrifying.
He's terrifying, and he also seems to know what he's doing. Like, you
yeah.
know, whereas Donald Trump seems to be just a guy who's, yeah, who's swinging a bag of hamsters around and seeing what he hits.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Steve Bannon, who's his, in the election he was his chief strategist, and now Donald Trump appointed all these people into his kind of like inner circle, and for some of them, he just made up new positions that didn't exist before, and for some of them, he used old positions that did exist before. So I can't remember if he's like the chief advisor or there's like also a chief counsel or something. Like Kellyanne Conway is one, Steve Bannon's another. Anyway, he's basically appointed these people to be his advisors.
Mm.
And Steve Bannon, who was his campaign strategist and who's now one of his chief advisors, called Trump in the summer a blunt instrument. He's like, he's just a blunt instrument. And he said, I don't know if he really gets it, referring to like conservative white supremacist, racist politics, which Steve Bannon is absolutely a proponent of, he's that guy on the anti-Semitic, like white supremacist, hateful, misogynist guy is Steve Bannon,
right?
Mike Pence is the religious fundamentalist voice,
yeah.
And Kellyanne Conway too, to a certain extent, although apparently you know, they're always fighting with her and she might be slightly on the outs is some of the rumors I've been hearing.
Wow.
Because they're all jockeying for power, all of his advisors right now. Kellyanne Conway also, you know, started her political career fundraising for religious, like conservative religious charities and political action groups and stuff like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So as I gather, everything is fucked. Where to start? So all these pieces of paper he's signing.
Let's talk about these pieces of paper.
So there's 10 of them. Is that right?
No, 10? There's actually only about five.
Five of them.
Here's what we need to talk about. Just from square one. Let's go from square one.
Square one.
There are three branches of the United States government, right?
Great, yes.
There's the legislature.
Yeah.
That's Congress and the Senate.
Check.
There's the executive, that's the office
president.
Of the president. And then there's the judiciary, which is like the courts culminating in the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
right? And those three governing bodies have basically the authority to like determine how America is run, and there's like complex interactions between all three of them. But I'm gonna like drastically simplify it right now so you can sort of understand what's going on here. So if you think of the government as like a machine that's designed to do stuff, Congress like builds the machine,
right?
They Congress, make the laws, and Congress is like, we're gonna create a department that X, we're gonna make us thing that Y and Z, and
create the what budget, laws there are, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or no?
The budget is yes, like it's a collaboration, right. I would say, but so Congress creates the parts of the machine, the laws, the departments, and then the president like runs the machine, right? Mm-hmm. So the president basically can, by choosing what laws to enforce over other laws, what things to focus on over other things, what parts of the government will get more funding than other parts, because the president has a limited amount of resources with which to run the whole government. That's how he kind of like determines the character of his government, the president, by choosing what parts of the government to energize the most.
Right.
And that's what these executive orders are. And executive orders are accountable to the judiciary, who have oversight over everything, who after something's been put into law or implemented, they can look at it, see if it's constitutional, see if it, that, which means, you know, to see if it violates the core principles of the United States and what it stands for and how it's supposed to be governed. And if it's not, they have the authority to take those laws out of existence and make them not laws anymore, right? Strike them down.
Right. Yeah. So there are the judiciary is a real safety net for the president and Congress.
For the people, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. When you think about the great landmarks in progressivism through the United States history, often you talk about the Supreme Court cases that decided them, like Roe versus Wade, which legalized abortion, or Loving versus Virginia was the case that decriminalized interracial marriage, right? There are many other like legal precedents like that. Right, also, there are legislation, you know, things like the Bill of Rights. The Emancipation Proclamation was an executive order from Abraham Lincoln. So it's usually a combination of all these things, right?
Right.
Yeah. But the final line of defense for the people against unjust laws is the judiciary.
Okay, cool. So, okay, this is already becoming more clear. If you didn't get that, I encourage you to go and watch The School of Rocks, How a Bill Becomes a Law.
This is one of those things that Simpsons totally ruined for me. Yeah. I don't know how the actual thing goes, but I know exactly how the Simpsons version goes.
I don't remember how it goes, because as a kid, I actually eventually found the cartoon annoying, because it wasn't about my own government, and I was like, why are you on instead of Recess? I want to watch Recess.
We all wanted to watch Recess.
Okay, cool. So that's okay. So he is signing a bunch of executive orders, which are not new laws. They're just enforcements of old laws.
That's right. And actually, presidents often get in trouble when they sign executive orders that basically are new laws.
Right, that don't coincide with old decisions.
There's, I mean, almost like many presidents have signed executive orders that later the Supreme Court's like, no, this is a new law.
Right.
And often presidents will have to then jockey around and try to do the same thing with a new executive order that just, you know, comes at it from a different angle. Right. So they
loopholes.
An executive order can affect an existing law and how that law is enforced, but it can't like create a new law.
Right. Okay.
That being said, a lot of the stuff Trump has done, he has total authority to do. A lot of the stuff isn't technically illegal.
Right. Okay. First piece of paper he signed. What are we talking about?
The first piece of paper he signed was,
it doesn't need to necessarily be an exact order.
Yeah, it's like the first thing that happened that people were talking about was he signed this order to block foreign aid funding to agencies abroad that mention abortion in any way whatsoever. Right. So if you're the Red Cross in Bolivia and you're helping people with
abortions.
Or like even if you are just helping people with medical treatment, but then you like have any literature about abortions or you counsel people ever to get abortions, you no longer get funding from the United States government.
Right.
Now, it's worth saying again, every single Republican president has done this.
Right.
They've taken this funding away.
Oh,
right? George W. Bush took this funding away.
Well, not like, great.
But every time, basically every Republican president who comes into power takes this away, and then when the Democrats come back, they put it back in. This always has ping-ponged back and forth between Democrats and Republicans. So it's a good example of something that, while horrible and not something I agree with personally, we do not agree with this.
Yeah, Jamie and Richard do not condone that.
No.
This is pretty biased, ladies, liberal stuff.
Ladies, your bodies are your own to choose from. Jamie and I will never tell you what to do with your bodies.
Yeah, do more with your bodies. That's what I say.
I wish I had like a emergency escape whistle. I'd play a sound effect right now that's like, and we're done.
Yeah, and that's, we're closing that's the end.
Subject change air horn.
Cool. So, okay, well, that makes me, again, not horrified at the decision, but a little more like, okay, well, this is an example of perhaps like hyperbole against Trump specifically, of like, if this has always been ping-ponging back and forth.
Yeah, it sucks, but it's not specifically Donald Trump.
It's just also, always sort of happened.
The U.S.'s foreign aid is so pathetically small. Like, they give such a small amount compared to what they could give for foreign aid that, like, the Netherlands could just pick up their slack.
Which I understand is what Canada and the Netherlands are going to do.
Yeah, I think a lot of nations are going to just... It's only $600 million.
Right.
That's how much he cut.
Right.
That's not very much money for a country.
No, it doesn't even pay for that wall he wants.
No, it doesn't even slightly pay for the wall. It's like less than 1/60th of the cost of the wall.
Right. Good. Which brings us to the wall.
The wall. Yeah.
That was another executive order.
That Trump signed authorizing... Well, I think the wording is something like a large physical barrier to be constructed on the southern border with Mexico. And here's an example of something that is weird about the Trump administration. So Trump is allowed to sign an executive order saying the wall can be built.
Right.
Right. He's allowed to do that.
But then Congress has to allocate the money for it, right?
No, the president can...
Just do that.
Can do that. The president has control over money. Like, he can use executive orders to direct money to build the wall.
Wow.
The problem is where the money is going to come from, because he claims Mexico is going to pay for the wall.
Right.
And one of the and this is something weird that the Trump administration is doing, where it seems like they're testing out ideas by just saying them.
Right.
Right. By just saying them and then backpedaling aggressively when everyone says they're fucking crazy. So they said one of the things they said was that the way that they would pay for the wall was to put a 20% import tax on everything coming from Mexico.
Yeah.
Which means that American people would pay that money.
Right, because they're paying 20% tax on everything.
If you get something from Mexico, that means you pay 20% more to bring it into the country, and the people paying that 20% are American people.
Right.
Now, the only way that this shit makes any sense and isn't fucking crazy is if you think of it as, well, then maybe Mexican goods will be so expensive that people will stop buying Mexican goods, and Mexico's trade will be so badly affected that they'll end up just paying us the $20 billion.
Right.
That's the only way it makes sense, because otherwise it's fucking... It doesn't make it like not work. It doesn't work. It doesn't make sense.
Right. Now, is that one of those things in which he is just hoping nobody works out, or like he's?
Yeah, I honestly think they shot straight from the hip on that one. They just flapped their gums, and they didn't understand. They didn't understand what they were saying. I think that I read some economists writing about it, and they were all baffled. Like, they're all confused.
Right, as to how...
Because like, it doesn't do what they think it's going to do.
Double and triple check their answers, because they're like, am I being dumb?
No, it doesn't raise the money for the wall. It takes money... Americans end up paying for the wall if you pay for the wall with a 20% import tax from Mexico.
Right.
Right? But this is the thing that fascism does, is they make you doubt... your own sanity, right? Like,
right, with the gaslighting and all that.
Yeah, that's right. Which is like,
I was reading about gaslighting.
Yeah,
I was amazed at how clearly the definition was ringing out over the last 3 years of government.
Well, I mean, and I think people are using that term. Some people are worried that people are using that term to like trivialize the actual domestic abuse that it was based on. So that is worth saying that, like, when your partner is making you feel like things that happened didn't happen, or making you feel like you're in the wrong or crazy, right? That's what gaslighting originally was. It comes from a play, like a British play from the early 20th century.
Machiavellian? No.
No, it's a different thing. thing.
Different thing.
Yeah. Future episode, everyone.
You know what, someone in the comments, if you know where gaslighting comes from.
No, it's from a play. I'm telling you right
hop,
now.
Hop,
it's
hop
from
up a play. There. If you know the name of the play.
It's Gaslight. It's the name of the play. It's Gaslight.
Okay, have you ever heard of the play Gaslight?
It was in Toronto three months ago.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The play is called Gaslight, everybody.
Yeah, go check it out. Oh, yeah. Right. It had the guy from Game of Thrones in it.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
There you go.
I missed it. But there you go. There you go.
But so applied the way people have been using it. So, like, it's worth saying, you know, we don't want to trivialize that meaning of it. But then the reason people are using it now in political context is, like, when the people who are supposed to be in charge and supposed to be in good faith running the country are saying stuff that's so obviously wrong and crazy and, like, dumb and misguided, you have to almost give them the benefit of the doubt for a second. Right, you want to give them the benefit of the doubt for a second because you don't want to believe someone this profoundly stupid could possibly think that this is a way to run the country and affect the world.
Right.
And so, and it's that self-doubt when you hear something that's obviously wrong and crazy, but you still feel the seed of doubt growing in you, that's the psychological warfare that fascism brings to us, right?
Mm.
And that's how you start to lose your grip on reality and the facts. And all many totalitarian states have this psychological phenomenon in it where you know things are not right, but you don't know what to do about it. And you sort of want to just pretend things are okay.
Right. Well, I feel that way sometimes of like I hear something that seems crazy, not as crazy as this, somehow less crazy. But I hear it and go, how does anyone think that's a good idea?
Yeah.
Well, they're in charge. They must know what's going on.
Yeah. And the answer now is
what
they
do I know?
They don't know what's going on. They're fucking insane.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Okay. Wow. So, and also with regard to the wall, just bring it back to that. The Mexican president has canceled his trip.
Yeah.
To which I find hilarious as the main thing that Donald Trump campaigned on is like, I am the best negotiator. There's never been a better negotiator than me. And all the first person you got to negotiate with just said no.
Yeah, that's right. Just bailed.
And the whole thing crumbled. Yeah.
It's confusing because it's also public. And I think that this is a huge learning curve for Donald Trump, too. Like, I think he desperately wants all of this attention more than anything in the whole world, but he's definitely not used to everyone riding his ass so hard
and paying so much
attention to everything he's doing.
Yeah.
I definitely think he's benefited from having most of the actual stuff he's tried to do, you know, be in private meetings and backroom dealings and stuff. His public persona and his like actual negotiating were never the same thing until now.
Right.
But now they are, and everyone's starting to see what a crazy asshole he is.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard a couple of people, all smarter than me, have said this is the worst thing to happen to our generation.
Unquestionably.
This is the defining moment for all of us. And we are reacting to it by making a podcast.
Hey.
Hey. So we've talked about the wall. We've talked about the anti-abortion funding. What else we got?
Okay, so it was Holocaust Remembrance Day on January 27th. And Trump issued a statement, which for the first time in the history of presidents issuing statements on this day, it made no mention of Jews at all. No mention of Jews being killed in the Holocaust.
Right.
It just said, you know, like people who were persecuted, right?
Right.
And there was like a little bit of bullshit, shitty online right-wing people, semantic quibbling about, well, go look up Obama's statement on this day from 2008 or not, like 9 or something, from Obama's first year, and he didn't make a statement on that year.
Right.
And George W. Bush didn't make a statement the first year either. This has been a day of recognition since 2005.
Mm.
So Bush missed one, Obama also missed one, but Obama did 5 others or something, and Bush did 3 others. And every single time, Bush, W, and Obama both mentioned Jews every single time.
Right.
And this White House did not mention Jews.
Right.
And a lot of people are thinking this is the work of Steve Bannon, who is, you know, the former editor of Breitbart News, which is a main right-wing
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, man.
Oh.
That's like one of Donald Trump's, his main political guy, his main advisor. Oh. He used to edit Breitbart News, right? So that's why they're not talking about Jews dying in the Holocaust, because it's like a horrifyingly anti-Semitic news outlet who under Bannon would like, there were headlines that were like, this guy's a Jew. Like that's like a headline that they, the kind of thing they would have.
Right.
And they claim that it was because they were like, well, other people were targeted in the Holocaust as well. And it's like, sure, but you know that the Nazis called it the final solution to eradicate the Jews, right? Like, that's what it says on the documents, right? Yeah. Like, it's, you really want to, like, and also you guys really care about the, like, you know, homosexual people and the gypsies who were also arrested in the Holocaust, I'm sure.
Yeah. That's who you're being
that's
sensitive
who you
towards.
Really, really, you're really going to bat for them right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, so stuff like this, while it's not policy, is an example of where we are now, right? And people think, and you can see the different influences, right? What's interesting is Jared Kushner, who is also, I've heard him called Trump's mini-me. Like he's Ivanka Trump's husband.
Okay.
And he's appointed in some sort of advisor, vague advisor capacity too, that didn't exist before. Right. And apparently he's like very close to Trump, has Trump's ear in a lot of things. And Jared Kushner is Jewish. His grandparents were Holocaust survivors. Mm. Right. So here's an example. And Kushner uses his, like uses that as a political wedge all the time. And the Kushner family is very divided about the fact that Jared is in this administration right there. It's a very interesting thing. But there's these different voices in the White House right now. Like, would Jared Kushner have not made a reference to Jews in the Holocaust speech? It's not clear, but this sounds like a thing Steve Bannon would want to do. Right. You know what I mean? So you can keep an eye out for the different influences that are at play here.
So as well as wrecking the world as we know it, we could all, we
they're
going
to destroy history also.
They're also going to destroy history. And we could also bear witness to like a Julius Caesar-esque everybody gets murdered, stabbed in the back political struggle.
Oh God, yes.
In the White House.
You know, Chris Christie.
I guess that just happened in Brexit as well. Yeah, it's just like everybody like.
Chris Christie was a big who ran against Trump in the primary, but it's like, you know, he was the governor of New York. Yeah. He was on Trump's transition team, and then he got kicked off of Trump's transition team by Jared Kushner because Chris Christie was behind the investigation that put Jared Kushner's crooked real estate mogul dad in prison. So Jared Kushner has like a revenge-y streak.
Right.
Apparently also he Jared Kushner owns The Observer, like a paper called The Observer. Mm-hmm. And apparently he like many times ordered hit pieces on people who like had wronged him, even when they couldn't find anything, any dirt. He kept trying to order hit pieces. This is an example of another dude who's in.
You know, they say
it's also worth saying. Jared Kushner is a trust fund billionaire son who didn't have good enough marks to get into Harvard, but his dad made a $2.5 million donation, and that's why he got in.
Wow.
Yeah.
A little bit of shade thrown at Harvard there.
fuck you, Harvard. He should have died.
You know that I was reading that book sales of 1984 have skyrocketed in the last few months.
And I think that's cool, but I also think like,
yeah, it's a great
book. Go take a Muay Thai class. like unless that book like blocks a taser like hook coming at you, like, yeah, it's a good book and it's interesting, but go join the Democratic Socialists of America, or go join like a local organizing group and get out in the streets and use that as your defense. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Sign some petitions.
Yeah,
I've been signing petitions like a goddamn maniac.
Oh yeah,
it's my job.
This is okay. This will be my soapbox moment to be like, sign the petitions, go to the march, stand in the back and chant. Like the stuff that's boring is helpful. It seems so boring, but it's helpful. It really is. Just keep the heat on. I would like to say too, like, plug in. Just plug yourselves into the networks of people who are taking action, trying to do things, and like, you know, watch and learn and get yourself out there when you can. I think all of us are going to have to learn how to engage politically with our world in ways that we are not necessarily accustomed to, because for so long it was taken away from us, the idea that we were political actors and political agents, and that we have collective action available to us as a way to affect our world. You know, like most of us don't think of ourselves that way, and we were raised to not think of ourselves that way, and the system encouraged us to not think of ourselves that way. But the truth is that we were bled of a lot of our political power, and now a lot of people, I think, are pissed off with that, fed up with it, and are taking it back.
Yeah.
This is the time to start getting interested.
Great. All right, well, yeah, now that you've all sharpened your pitchforks, let's yeah. put them down and listen to these two assholes a bit longer.
Yeah, yeah.
What, so, okay, so we've talked about the wall. We've talked about the anti-abortion laws. We've talked about the Holocaust Day.
Yeah.
What are some more pieces of paper that old Donnie Trump is signing? Definitely the immigration thing, but I think my feeling is that's going to be a big chat. So yeah. I kind
of let's rip through a couple quickies.
Yeah, yeah.
So he pulled America out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was a free trade agreement with nations on both sides of the Pacific, Australia, South American countries, kind of like East Asian countries. Which was a free trade agreement like NAFTA to, get rid of tariffs and allow trade to happen freely in exchange for, better standards, like work standards and workplace rights standards and copyright law enforcement and stuff in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
He pulled America totally out of that. He's opposed to NAFTA and stuff too, so that's not so surprising.
Mm-hmm.
He also signed an order reopening construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Keystone XL pipeline. Somebody was like, did you know those aren't being made with American steel? And he's like, as long as they're made with American steel.
Good.
And I mean, we're going to do an episode soon on the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Yeah. So we'll save some bombs for that. But because I heard that and I had another one of those moments where I sort of thought, okay, that's awful, but is that something that any Republican president wouldn't have done?
I think it's likely, yeah. I think, or I'm not sure, honestly.
Right.
Because
it was just stopped.
Yeah, it was stopped by Obama in an executive order, like in December.
Right. Okay, good.
I mean, and it's always worth saying Donald Trump owns stock in the company that is building that pipeline.
Sure.
let's never forget.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, yeah, we got a whole episode coming up on Standing Rock and the
Dakota
Access Pipeline. So, if you like what you're hearing now,
stay tuned
and subscribe. So we've got that, and then
he also, on the first day, he paved the way for Obamacare to be repealed.
Of course.
Right. So that's a big one. Also not surprising, there's a huge division right now in the Republican Party about what they're going to replace it with, as there has been for many years, and they have never moved on that at all and don't seem to be any closer to finding a real solution. So it's looking more and more likely that Obamacare will be repealed with nothing to replace it, and that means that millions of people will not have health insurance.
And millions of people will die.
Probably. Lots of people will die.
It's crazy, everybody. It's just crazy.
It's
psychotic and stupid and
it makes no fucking sense. This is fucking
crazy.
Like I follow some very funny, very political people on Twitter and in the world, and like the world is so much less funny now than it was 10 days ago. Everyone was joking. Just even people, not as a way to deflect from what was happening, but just to stay sane. And I think I've seen very few people still joking.
Yeah, well, I sort of had that complex coming into this podcast of like, oh, the last one we did was on Vladimir Putin. And he's kind of like nicely far away and like a little bit hilarious. So we shouldn't have too much trouble making jokes at his expense and the expense of his system. But I'm like, this is happening right now and only a couple of thousand kilometers away and is affecting everybody in the world right now.
Yeah, like
how the hell are we gonna make light?
I honestly wanna like do the crazy person laugh every time I think about it, where I'm like, oh yeah, it's fine. Donald Trump's just gonna leave millions of people without health insurance. and then my eyes are bleeding.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I feel all the time.
Yeah,
so let's take a breather. Let's just both take a breather. You okay?
I'm
feeling it too, man.
Yeah. Well, this probably fits in. I was mentioning to Richard earlier that like yesterday, for the first time in my life, I am a supreme pacifist, but yesterday for the first time in my life thought, hard about joining the military and what that would look like. And maybe that's what how I should allocate my personal resources. And that's how I should contribute. We're not for my sort of like distaste for being told what to do. I feel like I already would have made that decision, because part of me goes, yeah, it's a sacrifice that I think is a bold and brave and courageous thing to do. But I also would want to be a peacekeeper in some place and not like do awful things at the hand of somebody that I don't trust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that a lot of people feel powerless. Mm. And I think that the idea that you could enter something that has structure and history and would like empower you is attractive. Like, I get it. I went through a tough breakup once and I felt like I wanted to join the army too, man.
Yeah. If only you got stationed at her house.
I know, right? Yeah. Yeah. Just out there in the pouring rain, like a Buckingham Palace guard, like not moving.
Yeah.
It's like a shit version of Say Anything with John Cusack. It's like I'm just in my like soaking wet army outfit, like so fucking miserable, like just the worst guy in the world.
Yeah. We're going to have to edit a lot of this, because most of it's us just sighing heavily in disbelief.
I know.
So the fourth thing, was the Obamacare thing, which brings us, of course, to...
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we move on to this immigration order, I want to say, too, that the Democrats have been appalling. They have been slow to criticize. I mean, some of them have obviously been quite vocal, but like they are not, you know, Republicans stalled many of Obama's appointees. Mm-hmm. The Democrats have not been doing that. Maybe they don't think it's an effective way to govern, but I think that they're being cowards. Like, I think they need to realize that the temperature is changing here and they're not stepping up.
And that's important to say, because Richard and I may be just a couple of bleeding heart lefty Canadians, but we can be critical of the people that govern on our side of the aisle as well.
Oh, hell yes.
And especially, I mean, American Democrats are like, at best, center or right-wing liberals in Canada.
Honestly, the Democrats, I think they're a failed party. I think that I would not be surprised if we see the implosion of the Democrat Party and a new party emerge in its wake.
Wow.
Because
because they were saying that about the Republican Party, but then I guess Trump won.
Yeah, right.
Right.
If Trump hadn't won, if the Republicans had nominated someone in the primary like Jeb, I wonder what would have happened. Mm. You know, I wonder what would have happened.
Right.
But I think that Hillary
Clinton could have destroyed Jeb, I feel.
Yeah.
I
don't know. I don't think I have a huge amount of faith in Hillary Clinton's electability anymore. Call me crazy.
Right.
I feel like...
anymore, but at the time, again, like, you know, we talked about this a little last week, but that she was running with the I'm not Donald Trump card.
Yes, and so what would she have run with if she had, I don't know.
I guess this is all woulda, coulda, shoulda.
To be honest, like, I felt a little sorry for Jeb. Yeah. I mean, and he's a horrible man. Oh, he's awful, but...
yeah.
But he got his lunch money taken, and we all watched it happen. Like, we watched Donald Trump give him a swirly.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah, and Chris Christie, we watched the same thing happen. His pants got pulled down in front of the whole class.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mitt Romney, even like post Trump getting elected, Mitt Romney just getting roasted.
Yeah, you know? Just like, broken.
John McCain getting called like embarrassing names. You know, it's like. Okay, yeah. But all this to say,
if Trump hadn't have won, that would have been a really enjoyable thing to watch.
Oh,
but
God.
Now it's just sad.
It was like, at what cost, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And but all this to say, like, I truly think the Democrats, I think the Democrats still think things can go back to the way that they were.
Right.
This is the key. I think the Democrats are still think the status quo is possible, but it's gone. It's gone. We need more impassioned and more capable people. Honestly, the Democrats let their local organizations erode, and that was a huge mistake. They managed the party very poorly.
Yeah, well, I was watching Bill Maher last night, and I sometimes like Bill Maher and sometimes find him a bit hard, a bit hard to like. But he was talking last night about, or maybe not, this wasn't last night, I was watching him last night, but he was talking about how Democrats seem to apologize all the time for everything, every tiny thing, and how sort of the empathic Democratic public punishes those in their own fold constantly for misstepping outside of out of moral perfection,
right?
That it gives Republicans and Tea Party members lots and lots of time to take over school boards and to pass crappy secret laws that won't be important for another 2 years and so on. So while there's this so much self-flagellation in the liberal parties, those who rule less empathically can actually rule and move forward.
I think that's possible. I also think, though, I'm starting to think more and more that infighting in the Democratic Party is good and necessary. I think that the far left in the Democratic Party should be fighting the centrists in the Democratic Party, and they should be saying, no, this isn't enough. It's not enough that what you're doing right now, you need to do better.
Right.
If only to better define the different beliefs that people actually have in the world and engage more people in total.
But then wouldn't you also agree that two parties is a crazy small number of parties, in that, like, if you know, I think of places like Israel and like Germany and stuff that have many parties,
yes,
all of which have so it's not just liberal and conservative values, it's different shades of each, so that everybody is being called on everything at all times, and there's no fear, less fear of alienating your party from the other side. For instance, Jack Layton on, like, in the NDP, which is the New Democratic Party. For those of you that aren't from Canada, you're all going to be from Canada.
Most you of never you. Know.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah.
Here's looking at you, Olaf.
But you know, a lot of people. I've heard. So I don't know the quote specifically, but I've heard that he never intended to win as an NDP. He always intended to be the party of opposition, the voice of
right.
Of dissent for or assent for whoever is running the country.
And the thing is, the number of parties that you have in a government and in a country has always been a question of stability versus diversity, right? If do you want a more stable government, or do you want a more representative government? I am a big fan of a more representative government. I think the artificial stability created by not having very many parties is a dangerous situation that is long term not actually very sustainable.
But it seems to me it just creates a real them and us persona, which
it means that, like, the Democrats bet their whole brand on not being the Republicans as the Republicans slid farther right. But like I said last week, they stopped listening to the actual needs of the people that were going to elect them, assuming that because they weren't horrible racists,
they would
get all the votes. That's not enough, right? And when you have a more fragmented base, that's not possible. And in fact, politics becomes the art of all of these very clearly defined differing viewpoints finding the places that they agree on stuff in order to run the country. It's interesting what you say about eternally opposition. I've been reading a lot about Confederation. This is the 150th year of Canada's Confederation, Confederation, and which is when Canada became a country, Olaf, our single non-Canadian listener. I've been reading about George Brown, who many people only know in opposition to John A. Macdonald, who was our first prime minister, as, like, the shitty version of John A. Macdonald, who never won. But what's interesting about George Brown is he did spend his entire life in opposition. He was the prime minister for, like, he wasn't the prime minister of Canada because Canada didn't exist yet, but he was, like, the head of the government when Canada was just Ontario and Quebec merged as one country, like a single union. Mm-hmm. It was one province. That's what it was called. For like 2 days, and then he was booted out because of a weird constitutional quirk. And he was never in the majority. He was never in power, but he was the one who wanted Confederation, and he got it. You know, he still achieved, like, one of his hugest goals for Canada and for the British colonies in North America. even though he was never in power. And that was possible because there were many different parties and he managed to broker, like, you know, they managed to disagree about fundamental things about how their world should be structured, but then come to realize there were places they could agree and they could collaborate in those places. And I'm worried that that discourse is very quickly dying.
Right.
In our modern world. Also worth saying, you know, Canada, not all sunshine and rainbows. You know, horrible indigenous genocide. All of these men were horrifying racists. I see that clearly. But, you know, there is something to be admired in getting that shit done when you were not in power. And there's something to be admired in the model of collaboration that they used. I'm sure when we talk about Standing Rock in the future, we will talk a lot more about indigenous governance and just, you know, indigenous sovereignty in Canada. So I will put it down there.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah. All right. And that brings us to the final thing we'll be talking about with regard to the things that Donald Trump has signed, mm-hmm. which is the Muslim ban. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that, what it specifically dictates, Richard?
Yeah, so Donald Trump signed an executive order that prevents any visas from being issued to anyone attempting to visit and any refugees from 7 countries in the kind of Arab crescent of mm-hmm. the Muslim world, which is the countries are Iraq, Iran, Syria, Somalia. Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen.
Nailed it.
Right. and so what the problem... Okay, so and Trump got those countries. Those 7 countries were flagged by the Obama administration for extra vetting. So if you tried to get a visa and you came from those countries... You would be looked at more closely, right? Mm. And the Trump administration used that list of countries to decide which countries to bar entry from for a period of 90 days. Mm. The problem is they were crazy unclear in the wording of how they created this executive order. And it also appears they didn't consult with anybody, mm. right? They didn't talk to the Department of Homeland Security. They didn't talk to the immigration officials. They didn't talk to the people whose job it has been for many years to watch the borders about. And this is where the Trump presidency is different from a normal right. presidency.
Like what you were saying about just saying something and seeing
exactly.
how it flies.
Yeah. If you were the president and you were like, I want to make sure that we are vetting these people properly, the first thing you do is have a meeting with the people doing the vetting
right.
to see how they vet people.
Right. And be like, how can we
And then you
that?
Would learn
help you?
That those 7 countries are already vetted very closely.
Right.
Because right? like people who are Trump supporters say this is all about safety and all about making sure those countries are being vetted properly. Well, those countries were already subjected to extra vetting by the U.S.
Uh-huh.
Right. So the Trump, like apparently the people in the immigration department were refreshing the White House website waiting for this to be published because they don't know anything about what it was going to say.
Right.
Like they were waiting for it to be published to the public so that they could read it. And they were given an hour to look at it and respond to it.
Wow.
Wow. So that's why there was this massive clusterfuck about who exactly this order applies to, right? Mm-hmm. The main crazy thing that happened was that customs agents, it came down to individual customs agents to enforce this. And they started enforcing it on people who have U.S. green cards, right? So people who were legally permitted to live and work in the United States who came from any of these 7 countries
yeah.
were being turned away at the border. So if you were a green card holder and you were visiting your family back in Yemen, then and you were flying home, you were not allowed back in the United States and were sent back to Yemen. You were arrested, kept at the airport, not allowed to talk to anybody, and then many people were put on flights back to where they were coming from.
Yeah.
Now, it's worth saying again, if the whole point is security, to get a U.S. green card is an arduous, multi-year process involving a huge amount of vetting.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, even like, you know, as a Canadian actor and comedian, it's like an overwhelming thought. To try and become a U.S. green card holder.
And could you imagine if you were from Iraq?
Right.
Right?
Right.
The other thing is that the executive order, the text of the executive order mentions 9/11 3 times in the first paragraph, and the 3 countries the 9/11 hijackers came from, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Egypt are not on the list.
Yeah. Well, which leads me to my next question. Why these seven? Like, why specifically and not Saudi Arabia? Why not?
The reason is racism. Right. Like, actually.
Good. Glad we got to the bottom of that one.
And racism and money. Like, right. These are the bad Muslim countries, right? These are, like, the poor Muslim countries. These are refugee countries, right? 40% of the refugees to the United States come from these seven countries. Mm. And, you know, the America has... Trump, A, has business interests in the Emirates, in Saudi Arabia, and in Egypt, right? He has... There's Trump hotels in all three of those countries. Mm-hmm. So that's absolutely part of it, A. Yeah. B... Yeah, it's a deliberate move against refugees, right? It shuts down all refugees from entering the United States from those countries, and like including ones that were in the air, including ones that had waited for years to get to the United States and whose planes were in the air when this order got signed, got turned away at the border,
right?
That, which is a fucking nightmare. And this is the thing, and it also applies quite possibly to dual citizens of these countries who are like Canadian. If you're Canadian and you're from Iran and you never formally renounced your Iranian citizenship, you can be turned away at the border. And since then, since this executive order was issued, they've been saying, no, that's not true. Dual citizens are not, this law does not apply to them.
Yeah.
Except the Department of Homeland Security still does say it applies to them. So there's still mixed messages, right? It's a completely confusing, chaotic rollout because they didn't take the time to actually be specific and clear and consult with people about how this stuff happened. And because of that, there was chaos.
Yeah. Well, and as Richard and I know well, as with many Canadian comedians, you know, we've gone down to the States a number of times to do shows and things like that. And even if we have permission, even if we have like signed documents saying we're not going to be making any American money while we're down there.
Which we never are.
Even if we have all of that, it is a clusterfuck to get down there, and most people end up lying anyway.
The border is just not
to avoid issue, and that's like before all of this stuff. This is, you know, so even if it's okay and okay in law, the border guards of the U.S. can be fucking crazy.
It's not an insecure border. Mm. Like, you do not get the feeling going through that border that it is a cakewalk.
Yeah.
You know, it is a serious thing to cross the U.S. border. I'm sure we all feel that way. And it's just not clear that this is going to add any kind of security. And it is definitely going to antagonize a lot of people. Yeah. Like, Iraq stopped issuing U.S. visas.
Right.
Right? It's basically what everyone fears the U.S. is. This Muslim-hating... You know, like, deeply petty, vicious, autocratic state. Like, for a lot of people, this is for certainly for Muslims in those countries who are trying to have closer relationships with the U.S., who hate Muslim extremists and who want stability and order in their countries. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a nightmare scenario because suddenly the nation that these people were putting their faith in has totally turned its back on them and proven itself untrustworthy.
And has become the thing that everybody has been accusing.
Yeah, the extreme, what the extremists say America is, America has just worn that mask.
Right. And yeah, well, this is anecdotal, but this was yesterday. I was flying home from the UK, and I was stopped over in Iceland, and they made an announcement in the Iceland airport that anyone traveling to the US had to report to this desk somewhere inside in the airport for extra screening. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the first moment it became real for me. I've been away for the last 2 weeks, so mm-hmm. I've been nicely far away, but this was sort of the, I am returning to a place that is different than when I left it. And
in a way the immigration ban, it represents like the perfect storm of all of the things at play so far in the Trump administration, right? It's like short-sighted and racist. It involves an element of like flapping your gums before you think about it too much and causing a lot of trouble and chaos, right? It involves like the different advisors putting their fingerprints on everything, right? It's like a very Steve Bannon kind of measure. It's, you know, it's got like confusion and all this rhetoric and blowhard kind of doubling down on, oh no, it's for security, mm-hmm. but then it's so transparently not for security. If you care about preventing 9/11, why would you not include the countries that the 9/11 hijackers came from? It's just ridiculous. Yeah. You know?
Well, which leads me to my next question of like, so why? Who benefits from this? As far as, and by benefit I mean, is it to appease his supporters? Is it a moral, like a misguided moral thing from Mr. Bannon? Is it does it have economic effects elsewhere that are hidden?
Well, I mean,
is it a smokescreen? Is there something else going on?
This is super fresh, so there's a lot of theories about this. I think absolutely it's a move designed to appease Trump supporters and appeal to them, energize them, and make them feel like he's accomplishing his promises, right? So mm-hmm. that's A. I think there's also an element of, it's a scary thought, but I think they're testing the waters. They're testing the boundaries of if they can alter the character of the country this quickly, and what kind of protest arises around it, and what kind of opposition they face. And I think, there's pretty intense opposition right now. We'll see if it lasts, if it's sustainable. Mm-hmm. This is a war of attrition. This is going to be a minimum of 4 years of war. Like, and hopefully it remains, I pray it remains like governmental, legal, judicial, protest-based war, but this is an antagonistic situation the United States has found itself in. Mm. There are two United States being fought over right now. You know what I mean? The United States is on a forking path, and right now the people who are there are going to have to choose which path they want their country to go down. Right.
Right.
It's a serious time in mm-hmm. America. And so I think they're testing how quickly they can change things. Obviously, and I mean, one of the scarier things I saw is they're testing to see if government officials are going to comply with them, right? Because individual customs agents could choose to refuse the order. Although now a federal judge granted a stay on it, which, right, the ACLU
That's right.
did a very fast legal action to get a federal judge to grant a stay on the order, but Department of Homeland Security is ignoring it. Right, which is right. not legal. And now the federal judge could order U.S. Marshals to arrest customs agents who are still enforcing this order. And it's not clear if that's going to happen either.
So ordering a stay on it means that it's like, wait, not
it's
yet.
Like, yeah, it's like, whoa. Right now, enough is up with this executive order that we're going to pause it. And it's not in effect, and we have to look at it. That's right. That's the power that the federal judiciary has.
Right, right. That sweet safety net we were talking
about. Yeah, that's right.
But now there's when you say the is this the Supreme Court that we're talking about?
This wasn't the Supreme Court. This was just, but this was a federal court.
Right.
So that means it has nationally binding.
Right. And has Donald Trump has he assigned a new Supreme Court judge yet?
Tomorrow. He's gonna announce his appointment tomorrow, Tuesday, the 31st of January.
I can't even wait.
Yeah.
I can't even wait. It's going to be like, Ronald McDonald.
It's going to be Count fucking Chocula.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be Negan from The Walking Dead.
Great. Awesome. Well, I can't wait to see who he picks.
Yeah, I know. Maybe it's going to be us.
Yeah, maybe.
Fingers crossed.
Maybe. That's a sweet gig. You're in there for life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I assume.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's horrifying. So we've talked a little bit about what they've enacted. Let's talk a little bit about who is there. Who's in the administration?
Right.
We've got Mike Pence, the vice president.
Yeah.
We've got Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon, who is a made up position.
He's an advisor. He's like chief advisor or something like that.
We've got Kushner, John.
Yeah, Jared Kushner.
Jared Kushner. We've got Kellyanne Conway. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a lot of billionaires rolling around.
Yeah, there's
in
like
there.
Rex Tillerson,
yeah.
Who's the Enron CEO. Although there's already talks that they're all butting heads, right? Like a lot of his department heads.
I can imagine. You have to be some sort of a psychopath to be a billionaire, don't you?
Can you imagine all these billionaire CEOs all having to work for Donald Trump as their boss?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what that looks like?
No. We need to get some cameras.
Vampiric, white, wrinkled douchebags who are used to being the CEO of a company all having to be like the small-handedest, like shittiest one of them all is now the boss. Like, can you fucking imagine?
That would be a great TV show. To be fair,
I'm watching it every day, man. Actually, are you not watching this TV show?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah,
I guess you're right. I mean, it would be a great comedy show to write.
Yeah. If Hillary Clinton had won the election, the show would be hilarious.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So it's just a ragtag band.
Also worth noting too is Rance Priebus, who's the Rince Priebus. How do you say his name? It's something like that. Rance Priebus, who is the chief of staff. So he's the head of the White House staff, and he is one of the only dudes who's like he's Republican Party guy. He's like a Republican. He's been in a kind of a functionary for the Republican Party for a long time, and actually he was one of the guys who, after Mitt Romney lost the election, was charged with implementing the report that was like, maybe we shouldn't say all Mexicans are horrible, but obviously he did not do a very good job of implementing that.
right. Rinse
and repeat.
Priebus. Dear God. We got Sean Spicer.
Yeah, Sean Spicer's the press secretary.
Who seems to be doing a real great job. I mean, to be fair, he might have the hardest job on the whole planet.
I mean, his job is literally just to go la 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 doo 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 doo. Well, but he's like me shitting in a public bathroom. You know, like I put my headphones on so loud whenever I have to like drop a toozy and I'm not at my house and I'm just like, I don't care what's happening outside of me and I could be anywhere. It's the only way I can make it happen.
You know, in this, I was expecting to learn quite a bit about government and politics, and I wasn't expecting to learn so much about Richard's hang-ups about pooping publicly.
Honestly, like, I just need to, I need to pretend there's, like, no people around me, and I just, like, blast music in my headphones. And,
oh, wow.
I feel like Sean Spicer.
I have
Spicer,
the opposite.
Really,
I have to know people witnessing.
You need witnesses.
Someone to be there, to be speaking in the background.
Look me in the eyes.
Yeah, that's why I don't go to the washroom in my own house. I walk down to the jerk chicken restaurant down the road and leave the door open.
Yeah, and surprisingly, you never eat the jerk chicken there, and yet you're the most horrible thing that happens in that bathroom.
That's right. Gosh. Okay.
I'm saying is Sean Spicer always looks like he's taking a shit in public when he's addressing the press, the nation's press.
Yeah. Yeah. What else is going on?
I mean, honestly, I feel like those are a lot of the key players. The power dynamics between them as they jockey for influence and position with Trump, and as they get their things, you know, into law, signed into his ear. That'll be what's interesting to watch. It'll be interesting to watch who falls from grace, who stays in the inner circle.
Right.
You know, like these will be peculiar things to watch, and we just all have to stay sane. Like we just have to keep, you know, breathe deep, look at the facts, get the real picture. You know, I think that
keep watching what's going on over here while other things are going on over there. You know,
the media is like the Trump supporters discussed and confused me on a large number of levels. But to be honest, I understand why they hate the mainstream media, because the mainstream media will gladly mislead you for clicks. You know what I mean? They will sensationalize things. They can be too quick to like to say something is to spin the story against Trump when it doesn't even necessarily warrant that.
Well, and that's one of the things I'm taking away from this was the anti-abortion laws,
right?
Or executive order, which is, you know, it's awful. It's just awful. But again, I wasn't aware that it would have
business
gone
business as usual.
Business
for a
as
Republican.
Usual. Yes, par
That's
for the
right.
course. And
but way more worrying is Mike Pence addressed the March for Life and said, like, we're gonna get rid of Planned Parenthood. That's worrying.
Right.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not always easy to tell the difference between what is business as usual for Republicans and what is like a particularly unique, like hellish thing that's happening right now. Okay.
Okay.
Have you had it explained to you? I could unexplain it to you?
I feel like that's going to be a benchmark of every episode we do.
Yeah.
That if I once I get to the point in which I wish I knew less,
then we'll stop. Just stay tuned for our sister podcast, Unexplain It to Jamie, where we just leave these mics rolling while I hit Jamie with a baseball bat until he can't remember what just happened.
Yeah, yeah. That's how you. That's the physical equivalent to Kellyanne Conway's alternative facts.
Oh, yeah. God.
Boy, oh boy, guys. That'd be a fun one to do, is if we just talked about stuff that's not true.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe we will do an Unexplain It to Jamie episode in the future once we get a better
handle. We should just turn this podcast into a podcast about the sexy Archie reboot.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. What's Jughead going to be?
I think he Jughead fucks now. That's
what I've been hearing. Jughead be fucking.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I'm about ready to put my head in the toilet bowl and wait. So let's call it then.
Take care of yourselves out there. You know, comment on this if we've got things wrong or you have a different opinion or there's any clarifying that needs to be done. We love being clarified too.
Yeah, engage yourself, activate yourself, show up to protests, sign petitions. Write to your members of parliament or your representative in whichever government you have. And
Kim Jong Un.
Yeah, write Kim Jong Un. Say, listen, Kim, I have a real
shout out to our North Korean listener, Olaf.
yeah, and this was at this point it was smuggled into North Korea in a hard drive in somebody's butt.
Dennis Rodman's butt.
15 years from now.
Dennis Rodman actually showed up and insisted we put a USB key with our Shona in his butt. It's the only way he can freak anymore.
Which case. Yeah, happy 2032. Stay active, stay vigilant, subscribe, comment, like, please share this around. We're just getting started, and we've got a bright future ahead of ourselves and lots to talk about if things continue on the way they have been.
All right, take care of yourselves out there.
Yeah, this has been Explain It to Jamie.
Well, Itchy and Scratchy are gone, but here's a cartoon that tries to make learning fun. Sorry about this, kids, but stay tuned. We got some real good toy commercials coming right up, I swear.
Hey, who left all this garbage on the steps of Congress?
I'm not garbage. I'm an amendment to be, yes, an amendment to be. And I'm hoping that they'll ratify me. There's a lot of flag burners who have got too much freedom. I want to make it legal for policemen to beat them. God, there's limits to our liberties. At least I hope and pray that there are. Because those liberal freaks go too far.
But why can't we just make a law against flag burning?
Because that law would be unconstitutional. But if we change the Constitution,
then we could make all sorts of crazy laws.
Now you're catching on.